So everyone, we're coming to you live from the new BEP studio for another thought-provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters regarding race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. And we're here live today to tackle the real, the raw, and the more uncomfortable truths shaping our world. No fluff, no filters, just bold conversations on issues that matter. From power to politics, culture to corporate America, we break it all down without holding back. So let's get into it.
Absolutely. And so everyone, today, we're going to take you on a journey, not through politics, not through business, but something older, something deeper, the seven deadly sins. And this uncomfortable question, me and Chris are going to try to answer. Why does America so often seem like the home country of every one of them? My partner, you want to be ready to break this down?
Absolutely. So let me start by giving a historical context. And this is not a historical podcast per se or a religious podcast. This is based on the reputations that America has gained globally. And it was originally eight deadly sins in the fourth century. You know, as a historian, I have to do my historian's respect. A Christian monk came up with these eight deadly sins and gluttony, fornication, avarice, distress, and anger. And so they eventually condensed it all and they combined sadness and distress to sloth. But the reality of it is there are seven deadly sins. Let me just go through them so you guys know kind of where we're headed with this. The first one is lust, and then gluttony, greed, obviously sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. And then, you know, that's it. That's the seven deadly sins. And so we're going to see how these align to our identification as a country or us as personalities within the country. And let me start with one of the most sensational ones, which is lust, because obviously sex sells. And we as a capitalist society believe that we have rights and freedoms to exercise these sometimes obsessions at our discretion. How have things changed since you was coming up? As it relates to even modern TV, Tony. I mean, stuff that my grandma used to cover our eyes. I don't know if you grew up in that type of holiday. You know, something buddy, to come on and two people be kissing. Remember, they couldn't sleep in the same bed on the Flintstones.
Buddy, so there you go, right? If you remember I Love Lucy, okay? Ricky and Lucy didn't sleep in the same bed, okay? And then everybody wondered where little Ricky came from, okay? Right. But at the end of the day, they didn't show adults in the same bed. Right. And look, before we get into this, let's just be clear here. Chris and I, we ain't saints. OK, right. We're not here judging people and you know, brimstone and fire and stuff. Right. We wanted to just talk about how our country is now going so far from its original roots. And look, everybody's a sinner and we all do stuff. So let's be fair. Right. I mean, so again, but now it's not just in your house. It's on TV, all right? Well, you can't watch TV with your kids. There's not a show, that just being fair now, and just be fair with us, be objective. Yep. Yep. What can you watch outside of the Disney Channel, and even that sliding a little bit, that, you know, when I was a kid, we would sit down you know, and I know TV has changed, but we would sit as a family, watch Happy Days, you know, Laverne and Shirley, Good Times. And did they have, you know, some sexual innuendo in them? Yeah, but it was more just high level, right? But it was something my mother didn't have to close my eyes. So, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right. Today, there's not a commercial. I mean, there's even a show called Naked and Afraid.
Correct.
All right? Correct. I mean, think about it. The music, there's not a song, all right, that's not being played that, you know, people using sexual profanity on the record. And look, do I listen? Yeah, I listen. But at the end of the day, I don't want to listen to that with my daughters in the car, okay? It's just gone we're just out there, right? And so these are the things that you deal with. Now, you get, oh, y'all old, you ain't with it, you know. No, I'm not, okay? Because I think there's certain things that should stay within that shouldn't be broadcast and created as normal, okay? And tell me, buddy, name a song that ain't sexualized.
Right. But name one. Like we said, the sell, the commercialization of sex or lust, and the idea that sex sells. And the reality is of it is that we use the concept of freedoms and liberty to express ourselves. So this is, think about the OnlyFans phenomenon. After post-pandemic, when the pandemic hit and people were locked up, this thing became a 97, in estimates, I've seen anywhere from $15 billion to $97 billion U.S. only pornographic industry. Now, some people will say OnlyFans is not necessarily porn because it's just, you know, solo women or whatever the case, you know, you can do whatever you want to. But the reality of it is these subscription-based dynamics where you in the comfort of your own home or in front of your big screen can turn and see real people acting these things out has to affect the fabric of the United States in some way because, and I'm not saying we should be in a communist censored environment, but damn, I mean, at some point in time, you can't just let the inmates run the asylum.
No, and I get that. The only, and look, and I don't want to talk out both sides of my mouth, right? Okay. And I'm not a subscriber either. I don't want people to believe, oh, he must subscribe. That's why he about to protect them. No, right. No. The thing is, it's in your home, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. So if you want to sign up for OnlyFans and you're chilling at the crib and you want to go on, and okay, you can do that in your home. But the bottom line, it ain't broadcast on TV, okay?
That's my point. Drug. It's the gateway. It's the desensitization. When you desensitize the allure of sexuality, now when you get these girls getting off the bus in these short shorts and all this stuff, I remember the Daisy Dukes, I Dream of Jeannie. Tell them about the I Dream of Jeannie situation, Tony. You remember where they got canceled because she showed her belly button?
Did they get canceled because
They got fined. They got fined. They got fined.
They got fined. Okay.
And was threatened to be cut off the air.
And buddy, she was number one. Barbara Eden was fine. let's just be fair now. Don't go too far. Okay. Don't go too far. No, right, cool. No, Barbara Eden was fine. All right. And who didn't want to have a genie in the box? Right. Okay. Right. But to be fair, she still was covered up. Okay. And you're right. You know, if you look back, and look, I don't want us to sound like prudes, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, in the 1920s, when women went to the beach, there was no bikini. Mm-hmm. Women went to the beach with, you know, full clothes on. You know, they bathing suit, but they were pretty much covered, right? And guys too. And look, so I'm not saying you can't do that. I mean, that's fine. It totally makes sense. But to your point, the when we talk about the seven deadly sins, mm-hmm. and the other, and when we talk about the word lust, mm-hmm. that's really the key. Mm-hmm. Is that there's an obsession. I'm not saying that you what you do in your house, do whatever you want to do, right? But in the day, we've created this obsession, yes. and to your point, we have desensitized it, and now it seems normal across all mainstream channels, where even the kids, you know, can't just, you know, they got to be immediately thrust into sexualization. Absolutely. At 8, 9, 10, 11, unless you're monitoring everything that they do, you can't sit and watch a program with them. Forget about it. Unless it's Disney or Cartoon Network, you can forget about it. It ain't gonna happen, right? Even if you're sitting and you got a show that you want to watch, and they walk in the room, you gotta go out. All right? Right. And that wasn't the way when I grew up, okay, to be fair. So right. Sex is always, just to be fair though, sex is always sold, but I think the obsession, and that's one of the deadly sins of lust, because then that makes you do things that it takes you out of your the normalcy of who you are. Absolutely. And it'll lead you down a path that you can't stop.
Absolutely. And ultimately, the morality that it attacks ends up in a situation, and unfortunately, we can't unpack this, and we're not psychiatrists, but the idea of having these thoughts and predilections and being exposed to this and then it being okay, and then on the other end, when a billionaire goes to jail over it, we are outraged, you know what I mean, over the baby oil and all that stuff. It once again, it's because these things are out there and they're in our face, but then when it gets to a threshold, we all of a sudden are offended and don't want this to represent who we are as a society. And that's, like you said, talking out of both sides.
Hey, buddy, and that's it, right? And so let's be fair, though, too. So let's be clear. Mm-hmm. Okay, when we ask the question, does America also often seem like the home country of every one of these, right? Mm-hmm. So when we look at the money, so mm-hmm. let's be fair. I've been to Europe, I've been to other countries. I've been to Brazil, you know, which, you know, in terms of sex, you know, they I don't want to say they promote it, but they have open societies and, mm-hmm. you know, Spain and stuff to that nature, right? You know, and they, you know, it's so people, their kids learn more about their bodies younger. We become a little bit like taboo so then all of a sudden becomes taboo. Now people's like, I got to see it and I got to do it. Absolutely. Where when you grow up and it's not taboo and it's just life, this part of your body is what men and women do.
It's art. It's just regular thing. Then
it does. It's an art. It doesn't become an obsession, right? Absolutely. Here it's an obsession where we're making money off of it and we lead the world. Well, it was, I think I got a point here, right? From billion-dollar porn empires to hypersexualized entertainment and advertising, the U.S. exports lust like it's a commodity, all right? Sex sells in America and it's one of the top-selling products. That's all facts. Yes. Those are facts. So that's why we're asking the question, okay? That's why we're bringing this up, right? Is that this is one of the deadly sins, and is the U.S. becoming the home of it? Yeah. What's your thoughts, bro?
I think we have been. I think that and others. I mean, we can go to, you know, obviously one of the most obese countries in the world, and the sin of gluttony.
Gluttony, buddy, flat out, right? And here's the thing. This is when you know that is gluttony. Right. Okay. Well, there's a few things, right? I'm just going to use one, but then we're going to talk about several others. Mm-hmm. How many times you go to a drive-through, McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King, Dunkin' Donuts, Jack in the Box. I'm trying to name them all, right? Taco Bell. And you pull up and you say, yeah, give me a Big Mac and a fry. And they'll be like, what's the first question they ask? Do you want to supersize it?
Absolutely.
Right? And then be like, yeah, go ahead. Right? How many times have I been out with clients and we've gone to restaurants and we're at steakhouses and everybody's ordering steak. And then I remember this like it was yesterday. And as we're leaving and I'm looking at all the food that's on the table that people didn't even eat. I'm talking, and you talking bills of $1,000, $2,000. And then everybody doesn't eat the food. Mm-hmm. What about now where you have the middle class is pretty much being forgotten or lost, because now you got billionaires, right? And all they want is to make all the money, okay? And we consume, and then people buying stuff all the time, right, that they don't need because they got to have it because we live in a country that showcases you got to have it, right? And we start believing that. What's your thoughts, buddy?
So historically, the more corpulent people was a identifier of your status in society. So because times was always lean, you know, think a long time ago, times were always lean, so the people had to be lean. But if you have some meat on you, that meant that you could eat amply. That means that you had the ability, you were attractive to women, things of that nature. And some of that psychopathy has translated over. And so we want to be big, fat, and happy. But the fact is, we don't do things in moderation in the United States. That's what we're known for. We're known for going overboard all the time. And when you said you pull up at the drive-thru of, you know, Whataburger or whatever the case may be, whoever's going to eventually sponsor us, it's a situation where people think they're making an economic choice. And you know what I mean? It's, oh man, it's to go large, it's only 72 cents more and I can get a basket of fries and a, you know, this and that. But then you feel compelled to consume as much as possible.
And you eat it all.
My grandma used to always say, don't eat until you're full, eat until you're satisfied. Just eat until you, and if you could just really program yourself to eat until you're satisfied, you'll realize you've been overeating for a very long time. And unfortunately, that's just kind of how we've gotten used to it. When I was a kid, and this is not obviously the most political correct thing to say, and I'm not casting aspersions on any persons, but we would have to eat what was on our plate because we were, you know, a generation or two from not having a lot. And we would always hear, it's kids in China starving. Why are you not trying to eat these Brussels sprouts and this and that? I didn't know nothing about the continent of Asia, but I knew it was a lot of starving people in Ethiopia and all this other stuff. We were just so okay because of what we saw on television flat and other places to just throw things away and discard things. If I got enough, I'm good, you know? But your eyes are always bigger than your stomach is what they used to say, right?
But and so they've made a business model on that, right? That's again, we're talking when we say these things, we're not saying we're saying this is a business model in America, right? It's about putting stuff in front of people, right? So they will buy more than they need. And then more importantly, we play off that mindset. Right. All right. The supersizing, the go big or go home. Yep. You know, these are mindsets, right? You got to do it. You got to do it big time. Right. And then you walk around and just from a food standpoint, you have people that's obese. They can't even walk down the street. Walking, what is that, right? People dying of heart disease, okay? Which I think is the, I could be wrong. I remember I was talking to my doctor a few weeks ago. I think it's the number one killer, okay? Right. Here in the United States, heart disease, right? It ain't cancer, okay? Which most people think, it's heart disease, right? And so at the end of the day, we you know, it reminds me when I was a kid, you know, my mother, this was when we lived in Detroit, she bought us a rabbit. Right. And, you know, we had a rabbit as a pet. Right. And so and again, I watch Bugs Bunny all the time. But, you know, we didn't feed the rabbit carrots. OK, we fed the rabbit lettuce. Okay?
OK.
And then so my mother bought, or my stepfather, somebody bought it. They bought like a big ass. I don't say it was a crate of lettuce, but it was a big box. Full of lettuce, right? And then we all went out. We went somewhere, whatever the case may be. We came home. The rabbit was dead. Okay? And we were like, what? He got into the lettuce and couldn't stop and ate himself to death. All right. True story. True story. Don't know when to stop. Ate, just kept eating, and it just blew up. All right? And that's where we are today, is that people, there's no such thing as moderation. I got to have it all. I got to eat it all, right? And then there are people starving, okay, to be fair, right? And then we throw away the food like it don't matter, right? And that, again, that's a business. And again, that's part of the capitalism mindset, go big or go home.
Honestly, you know, one of the things it makes my wife despondent is to see an obese child. And one thing she says all the time is the kid doesn't know. You know, and usually if you see an obese child, you'll see obese parents, and they're just passing along that idea.
There's no question.
You know what I mean? Whatever is in there, they're eating, and then everybody's eating for pleasure and not for nourishment and things of that. You have to make smart decisions because you have to think you're going to be here. But like you said, you went to a doctor's appointment. It's a lot of people, especially like us, that use the emergency room as their primary care physician. You know what I'm saying? So it's a lot of diabetes and hypertension and all this stuff. We've read all about this, but the reality of it is you have to educate. They used to do the food groups and home ec and stuff like that. They got rid of all that because of capitalism, Tony. It's so much more good for the economy for you not to cook at home. And now, of course, everything with Whole Foods and all this stuff and everything organic, and you got, what's your man with the worm in his head? Kennedy. Now you got Kennedy changing all this stuff up, saying, you know what I'm saying? Everything is organic and everything is, and so it's really crazy, man. It's crazy because and once again, it leads into what we were going to talk about with the capitalism and the greed.
Buddy, flat out. So number three is greed, right? Mm-hmm. And let's be fair. United States, a country that's built on capitalism. A lot of people don't know that, okay? They really don't. It's built on capitalism, okay? Mm-hmm. And because of that, when we think of greed, remember, what was the flick? Michael Douglas.
With Wall Street.
Wall Street, right?
Yeah, Wall Street, yeah.
Didn't he? Was it Wall Street or Wall Street 2 where he said greed is good? Remember that?
Yeah.
And then was a slogan, don't be needy, be greedy.
Absolutely.
All right? You got to be. And buddy, it's a fact, right? Yeah. So now you got more billionaires. First, you got more millionaires than you ever had. Now you got more billionaires. Think about when I was a kid, a billionaire with J. Paul Getty.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a few. It wasn't a lot.
First now I ever heard of was Ross Perot. Ross Perot was the first person that I ever heard was a billion. That was like $1 billion? That's crazy.
Buddy, that was in the 1990s.
Yeah.
I'm talking, what was my man name? Not Diamond Jim, but I forget. They did the movie on the dude. He was a century. They all are in a way.
Howard Hughes and all them guys, yeah.
Howard Hughes, wasn't he a billionaire?
Yeah.
But I know J. Paul Getty was. He had oil, okay? Mm-hmm. Whatever, okay? But it wasn't a lot. So you see here, we're trying to figure out how many there were, you know, 40, 50 years ago. Now, you can name, buddy, stop. LeBron's a billionaire. Yeah. Oprah's a billionaire. You can just go fucking down the list, all right?
Yeah, if you come, I mean, you could be a billionaire.
Dr. Dre is a billionaire. I mean, you know? Think about it, right? It's insane. Yeah. So you got way more billionaires. Yeah. And then the middle class, which is the fabric of the United States, they're dwindling away. All right? So it's becoming the haves and the have-nots.
Absolutely.
Okay? Absolutely. And at the end of the day, anybody trying to tell you this is good, they're lying to you because it is about greed. Mm-hmm. It is about me. You always used to say this, and it's so true, right? And this goes for everybody, regardless if you're a billionaire, you're poor. It's just how we were born. There's three people that each person on this planet thinks about 24/7. And those three people are me, myself, and I, okay? That's a fact. That's just who we, that doesn't make us bad. It's just, it's about protecting ourselves. It's about what about, so blah, 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 right? But now that's on steroids. Mm-hmm. It's not about, I can make enough money to take care of my family. I can save some money, you know, create a little generational wealth to pass on to the next generation of my family. It's now, I gotta have everything.
Yep.
I gotta own everything. I don't want nobody else to get anything, all right? I want to own it all, right? And then not just from a financial standpoint, now they're instituting laws that allows, again, the seven deadly sins, number three, greed, that allows people to get greedy and just take it to a next level where everybody else who's not on that platform, that's not at that level, they're being left behind. And it's being talked about as being okay.
I think that the problem is that we're misconstruing the absolute definition of capitalism or socialism. These are just concepts, but people abuse them in such a way. Just like I was saying, my grandma said, the difference between being full and being satisfied. You can be satisfied financially, but what happens is, and I had a person at our old job that was a millionaire, and his thing was, and I understand the concept in this, so don't castigate me for this. How did a billionaire get to a billionaire if he was happy being a millionaire? It just doesn't happen. But they get this insatiable drive, like you got $5 million. And then $5 million should be fine. I remember people used to win the lottery and it was supposed to be life-changing. And now people are like, $1 million ain't shit. That ain't nothing. You know what I mean? But think about it. There has to be a threshold, though. There has to be a threshold, Tony. If you and your lovely family came into $25 million, why are you thinking? Thank you.
I'm good.
My business partner had this conversation one time. And I was telling him, the issue with you is you're insatiable. Because if we happen to come into $5 million, the first thing you're thinking of is, how do we make $5 million more? And unfortunately, if we made $5 million more, the next thing you're thinking is, how do we make $10 million more? He couldn't shut off. He couldn't be cool. Yeah, he couldn't smell roses because of greed. Capitalism is fine. It's when you abuse it that it becomes greed. It morphs into greed. And unfortunately, we're always thinking we just can't be satisfied with things that we've been blessed with or being on base or being cool. The house has to be bigger because of what other, the likes have to be more. The everything has to be on steroids, buddy, like you pointedly put it. And it's just dangerous.
Myself and I. Exactly. And here's the thing, though, bro. You know, everybody talks about this phrase, the American dream. Mm-hmm. Right? And I remember when I was in the Netherlands. And I remember when I worked for this European company. And I was running the U.S. operations. And then my boss, who was the founder, one of the founders of the organization, him and his family moved to New York. And so it was Thanksgiving time. And I didn't feel like, you know, I felt like it would have been great to invite them over for Thanksgiving because, you know, everybody, you know, Thanksgiving is a great holiday. It's about being thankful, all those type things. So I invited them over to our house, right, for Thanksgiving. They came by. And then I remember his wife saying, she came by our house and she said, oh, what a, such a lovely house. And she said, this, now I understand, this is the American dream. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, but that dream is become a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people can't afford a house. They can't even buy it. Okay. You got think, I mean, but buddy, the average house, I mean, it obviously depends on where you live, right? But $500,000 for a cape? Okay, you're kidding me, right? So if you're 25 years old, 30 years old, you and your wife, and you got you, what does that look? I mean, soon it's gonna be an average of $1 million. Okay, people can't afford that. Right? But the billionaires, who's buying up the property? Who's selling it? Right? Who's the one that who are the ones that get us in trouble when we have recessions? It ain't middle class. Right. It ain't the poor. It's the billionaires. Because to your point, they try to get greedy. Not don't try. They are greedy.
They are greedy.
If you look at every recession, don't take our word for it. Look it up. Every recession was started not by some tornado. It was started by some scandal that rich billionaires were trying to your point, make $2 billion. Okay. The greatest recession was what was called the in 2008, right? What was that about? That was about the Great Recession. What was that about? That was about billionaires trying to wrap up, get people to buy houses subprime that they couldn't afford, subprime mortgage. That wasn't poor people that started that. That wasn't the middle class that started that. That was billionaires, subprime mortgage, selling houses that ain't worth, I mean, that people couldn't afford, that those houses wasn't even the value. And all of a sudden it became upside down. All right. Cause they were packaging these mortgages into these financial portfolios and they crashed. Go back before that. You had the junk bond scandal. All right. We can go on and on and on. Recessions is started by billionaires trying to be greedy.
But we can go to Common last week. Most of the people that's being pardoned is fraud and tax people. Ponzi and then, I mean, damn, this is.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Wait a minute. Stop a second. Stop. A dude, him and his wife.
Yes, Lord.
They fraud $30 million. Stop. I mean, $30
million. Million.
Okay, that's not buddy, a big if you error. Write a, buddy, if you write a check for $2,000 and it bounces, that's your ass. You're going to jail, okay? And you won't get 10 years. But if you, I remember this. I'm not going to say the name of the company. Okay. I worked at a company and they hired a controller, right? And for people, that's a financial dude. And he was recommended by the CFO. So CFO said, this is my boy. The CEO said, let's hire him. This dude used to talk about, I'm not gonna say his name. He used to talk about, you know, how he had a house over here, how he did this and that, the whole nine yards, right? Mm-hmm. And then I remember he called me out on something one day. I forget what it was. It was one of our clients' invoices, something, whatever. He was like, we got to get that money, blah, blah, blah. I said, all right, buddy, don't worry. I'm working with the agency to get it, right? And then the CEO called me in the office. And my man used to talk about everything. He would tell me, he would pull me in his office, the controller, and start telling secrets about the company, right? I thought he was just saying it to me, but he was telling everybody, right? And so the CEO called me in office and said, man, Tony, man, what's his name, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't lie. I said, yep, dude's been saying this, that, this, right? Check this out. All of a sudden, they, you know, they got rid of him, okay? They fired him. Hired this other dude. He came in. Next thing you know, this dude was robbing the company. He was creating fake employees, okay? Or when somebody quit, he kept them on the rolls, and they still was paying them, and it went right into his bank. Yeah. And so I think he stole, was it $1 million? Was it something to that level, right? And he was trying to make a break for it. He was tight with one of the accounts payable ladies. And they were, you know, this is back when everybody was used, not Slack, back in the day when it was, I forget what it was, whatever it was. And they were like, say this to him. He was trying to see if they was on to him, right? They were, right? And he was making a plan to leave the country. And then the FBI nabbed him, okay? And he got, and federal, this was federal. Right. He got 5 to 10 years, okay, for like stealing, embezzling like $1 million, $1.5 million.
Right.
Okay. And I think they stole $30 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then act like they didn't do nothing. Well, we were persecuted. What are you talking about?
Yep.
Bruh, it's really bad, man. I mean, just think about that, right? Yeah. So you're 100% right. This is where capital, I mean, and look, I'm all for capitalism. You know, you can turn nothing into something. You have the ability to build any type of business, hold on yards. But the greed, part of the deadly, seven deadly sins of greed, is really an American situation.
Absolutely. But I think also, and it leads to our fourth deadly sin, is the idea of something for nothing or hitting a lick. People don't want to get it off the sweat of their brow and off a good day's work. They want to get it off your back. They want to eat off your plate. And people are just lazy inherently, and they want to do it the easiest way. Now, I don't want to go so far as to say AI is the new definition of technical sloth. But the idea that I want something to do something for me, if you talk to an older person, right? If you got somebody in your family that's close to you, they hate microwaves. They hate, you know, everything that's so convenient that don't make you get up off your ass and do something, because this leads to the gluttony that we talk about, the obesity and things of that nature. Kids don't play outside no more, Tony. We have a level of comfort that we feel like we deserve or we desire that actually leads to us having problems medically. You know what I mean? We just not moving around. You and I talking about just the simplest walking. I remember you gave me a good conversation about just walking. Just go walking, bro. Like, you ain't got to do nothing special. Get your ass up and walk. And there's people that's like, I'm not going to walk.
Here's the thing, though, bro. So, yeah, you're not wrong when in that part. Mm-hmm. But let's take it to another level. Because when I look at sloth, mm-hmm. I think of apathy disguised as comfort, which you talked about it, but to another level, mm-hmm. right? People do work hard. Let's be fair. We work harder than the majority of the world. That's one of the things that we're known for, and that's a downfall of ours as well. You know, always having our nose to the grind, not. But well, go ahead. What are you going to say? Because
productive hours, Tony. We work long. We work a lot of hours, and we're going to kill them for the OT. But the production level, vis-a-vis the Japanese,
I'm not disagreeing with none of that. So, all right, but cool. Net, they're working the hours. All right.
Okay. Yep.
Here's the thing that drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. When it comes to civic responsibility, mm-hmm. when it comes to social justice mm-hmm. or global awareness, they don't do nothing with that, mm-hmm. right? They don't want to know history. Right. They don't want to learn about other things, right? They don't question, you know, systems. They choose comfort over accountability, right? What was that flick about Denzel was in it, about the school and Remember the Titans.
Okay.
Yep, remember the movie, Remember the Titans?
Yep, absolutely.
And remember the scene where Sunshine said, "Hey, man, let me take you into this bar. I'll buy you, you know, a burger." And my man was like, "Look, man, they don't want us in there." He said, "No, man, it's all me. Just come on, let's go." So they went in. And then the owner came out and said, "Look, we don't serve your kind in here. You want something, you go around the back and get it at the kitchen window. And we don't like you too, hippie boy, blah, blah, blah," right? And then my man came out and he was mad. And he was like, "Man, I didn't know. My man said, "You didn't want to know." All right?
Right.
Right? You don't want, he was like, "He don't want to know."
Right.
And that's where people are. That's where the sloth comes. And what you were saying earlier, but the bottom line is, bro, people don't want to know.
Right.
Right. And let's be fair, though, too. They don't like people that smart. Let's be fair. Let's say it flat out. They don't. Okay. Yep. Because then it's a knock against them because they haven't, you know, they haven't read an encyclopedia. They haven't used their phone and look up anything. They haven't, you know, looked at, you know, higher learning. And then you don't have to have a PhD or get a master's degree. It's just they stop learning. Right. They know what they know, and guess what? Like Petey said, they don't want to know. All right? And then so if you bring something to them, like global warming, What are they talking about? That's this and that. They don't want, you see what I'm saying? Yeah. That's where we are, right? Yeah. And so at the end of the day, anybody that brings any type of intellectual insight to educate, they're the enemy. Anybody, when it comes to social justice or, you know, seeing what's happening to their fellow citizen, they turn their head the other way. The only thing they say is, I ain't do nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. And so to me, you know, as a country that's supposed to be, you know, the leader of the free world and jumps into all these different type of wars at other people's behest based on protecting them and whatever the case may be, when it comes to their own citizens, they don't want to know.
Absolutely. But you got to understand, we peddle the inconvenient truth, Tony. And the idea of us giving this reality and this information to people, the problem is we're bestowing accountability on them, because now that you know, you can't trick yourself. People tell themselves a lot of lies, but if they listen to us long enough and we divulge these things and you give references and you say, go learn for yourself, go see for yourself. Well, now you're giving them an activity. That's number one, that they're too lazy to go do, because the convenient truth is whatever my news outlet shovels to me is good enough for me, because it's good enough for the people in my ecosystem. This is why you need diverse conversations and different people on panels and these type of things that we do every week. This is why it's so beneficial, is because it's going to have you at least think, wait a second, I didn't see it that way, or I had no idea that existed. But I care. And it's just easier, to be honest with you, to be at arm's length with poverty, arm's length with civil unrest, arm's length with the person across the street. We are starting to isolate ourselves as human beings, unfortunately, or we're culting up for things that we haven't really unraveled what all is entailed here. We're taking a little bit of information, misinformation most of the time, and taking that to the bank, literally taking that to the bank, buying watches and coins. And we are really feeding an ecosystem of greed through our sloth.
Buddy, it's as simple as this. They don't want to know. All right? They don't want to know.
Right.
All right? They want to stay in their bubble, and then they want people, you just said it, and they want people to tell them what they want to hear so they can feel comfortable. Right. And that's enough for them.
Right.
They don't want to know, because you're 100% right. They have every tool. Mm-hmm. Even if you believe it, let me just see what the other side is saying. They don't want to, right? And that's part of one of the deadly sins, right?
Absolutely.
It's just being just, you know, not growing,
right.
Not growing, being comfortable, and not only having facts and stuff all in your face, and you don't want to take it to the next level because you don't care about nobody but you. And that's real. And that's right. Real. And, you know, and let's go to number 5, right? Wrath, yes. Right? You know, speak about that, my brother.
The idea of taking limited information, things that we've talked about, and creating an emotional component, a physical, emotional, psychological component where you feel so empowered, so entitled to expose or impose your rage and your violence and your vitriol on other people based off limited information. Once again, you were too lazy to do all the work. But then once you felt somebody offended you, or you felt somebody was infringing on what you believed to be your job or your neighborhood or your the way in which you want your kids to be at school, or whatever the case may be, because teachers talk about this all the time, where people aren't being rational in their presentation of the reality. People are so caught up in, I've been told that I'm special, or I see things this way, and if somebody doesn't see it the way in which I see it, I choose to meet that with violence or meet that with angry words. We've seen recently on the internet where the lady cussed out the 5-year-old, you know, was using racial epitaphs. And you haven't seen
this?
Oh,
yeah, I saw that. Yeah, she got to go fund me.
That's rage. It wasn't, we think of rage as like hawking out and somebody throwing blows. But when you have a vitriol response to somebody challenging your way of thinking or your presentation of yourself, that's you exposing your rage, your deficiency. And unfortunately, we've made it okay. Like I said, she made $1 million spazzing out on the 5-year-old.
But buddy, so yeah, I mean, but this is part of America's DNA. Okay, from slavery to police brutality to hate crimes, mass shootings, it's dressed up as protection or tradition.
Yeah.
We just trying to, we want to keep our way of life.
That's right.
Okay. But when anger becomes, as you just got finished saying, institutionalized, it becomes a weapon. Yeah. So now we can use these things to keep somebody in their place. Mm-hmm. Now we can use the law, or we can do something to somebody and then go on, create a GoFundMe to get people who thinks that what I did was great, right? And then they're gonna give me money to hire a lawyer. Think about, I mean, bro, where is the values? All that's gone. It's us versus them. And if you don't look like somebody, then it's you are them. Okay, and then look, let's be fair. It's not everybody, it's not. Right? But there's a segment of our population that it is that way. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, that's all they care about. All right? And it's really, and here's the thing. I mean, we've talked about this before. And why are we bringing up the seven deadly sins? Why are we having a conversation on this? I can tell you from my point of view why. And again, I know people don't read. They don't look at history. So if you don't want to check it, I'll just take my word for it. Okay. There has not been a superpower country, not one, that got overthrown by an enemy. All of those superpower countries destroyed from within.
Yep.
That is a fact. Mm-hmm. That is a fact. And where we're moving now, the United States of America will be destroyed, not by Russia, not by Iran, not by North Korea, by its own citizens. Mm-hmm. It happened to the Romans. You just look at history. Okay. Yep. And this is the trajectory that we're on. And the majority of people don't know.
It's the lack of discourse in the idea that if somebody offends me and I'm a politician, the first thing I say is they need to be jailed and whipped. And it's like, damn, you went from zero to, I mean, it couldn't be, we need to talk and iron out our differences and learn something from each other. It's rage. It's
here's the thing though.
It's such a negative thing.
To your point though, you know, 20 years ago, you could have those conversations. Okay. So it's not like it was like this forever, mm-hmm. right? But to the point that you just brought up, just over the last 10 years, man, it's gone. And I don't want to, you know, I'm just trying to, and I could be wrong, but a lot of this in terms of this us versus them was when Obama became president. Mm-hmm. Okay. When the United States had a black man as president, it opened up a wound that people couldn't deal with. And then it started before when it was blue state, red state. Think about it used to be the United States of America. Correct. Then all of a sudden they start talking about blue state, red state. Okay. And to be fair, that was before Obama, but this is where we start dividing ourselves. Right. And then now all of a sudden it's us versus them versus we are Americans. Yes, we have disagreements. Yes, we see things differently, but we can have conversation and learn from one another. And you may have some excellent points that I agree with. You may have some points that I disagree with. I may have some points that you disagree with. I may have some excellent points you agree with. Let's have a conversation and chat about it versus they're the enemy. And Chris is a liberal. And if you say anything, you're getting painted as he's a liberal, okay? If somebody, let's be fair too, if somebody is a Republican and they say anything, then they're the devil, all right? And it never used to be that way, right? That now they're trying to paint broad brushes and say, put you in a box, okay? And then now demonize you. And then to your point, you know, what happened the other day where the dude in Denver, you know, through those Molotov cocktails, right? On the Jewish people, when they were just out, you know, coming together, right? And now they're Zionists. They're this, they're that. I mean, what is, this is where we are.
But the problem is we allow for the proliferation of this thought process by calling it Black fatigue or Jewish fatigue. I'm just tired of them crying about things. And so therefore I act out violently or I act out inappropriately because I'm just, it's putting so much pressure on me as a white American, or it's putting pressure on me as, and so these terms that I hadn't heard up until 5 months ago, Black fatigue, like
I never heard that.
Oh yeah. So basically even with this woman that garnered all this money, it was, we're tired of them being the forefront of the thought process when we make decisions, them being American citizens, how I see it, them seeing it as, wait a second, why aren't we included? Why aren't we thought of? Why aren't we? And they're like, no, because I didn't grow up having to think of you first. And I liked it. America was great then. And so now we have they're calling it Jewish fatigue, Black fatigue, the fatigue of anybody that's not me having a say so or having a seat at the table. And they feel like there's a scarcity of seats. And so this envy, which is, you know, obviously the sixth deadly sin, this desire to want to keep it to yourself is greed. It's all these things kind of interwoven. But the green eye monster of jealousy, the idea that I don't like that you can be mentioned in the same conversation as I, or I don't like that you can. Here's the situation. If you are this person and there's aspersions being cast on you and you can't get your kid into the school, we talk about like DEI in the schools now, all this other stuff, right? This is a situation where envy is absolutely ridiculous in the idea of, if we go to just grades, be careful, be careful. If we go to a meritocracy where people have to earn it, because people have cultural stereotypes of who's the hardest working, who's the best in STEM, who's the best doctors, and you're not in those conversations from a stereotypical perspective. So when you say you want to make it an even playing field and also you're not being honest with yourselves, you are jealous that you had grown up seeing these positions with these type faces and now it's become more diverse and is ruining your construct of what you thought. There's a riddle that says the doctor can't operate on the person that came in a car crash or whatever. And basically the premise of the riddle is they're saying, why can't it? And in the way the riddle is composed is that you assume it's a man. You assume that it's a man doctor. And ultimately the reason why is because it's a female doctor. This is her son. And that's why it's a conflict of interest. But that tells you in just that little simple riddle how we've been programmed to believe certain things, president of the United States, this or that. Have to fit this phenotype, have to fit this gender dynamic, you know, all these things. And unfortunately, when that's challenged, it creates envy as opposed to, well, this is evolution. This is, you know, an expansion of things. This is that person you talked about this passionately one time, where if you're a CEO and you're a Black person, or you're a CEO and you're a woman, they assume you slept your way, you cheated your way, all these other things are aligned with, instead of you just being really qualified to get this gig. Why do you, that's envy.
Buddy, you ever see the flick? You ever see the movie? I can go to movies on this all the time, right? Jam.
Yes, sir.
Right? You ever see the movie Mississippi Burning?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
You remember, I don't know if it was in the beginning or towards the beginning of the movie when it was, William Dafoe, and it was my boy, and he just died not too long ago, him and his wife and the dog.
Oh, yeah, Glenn,
what's his name? He played Popeye Doyle and what's his name, right?
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah.
He was talking about, they were riding in the car, and he was talking about how Gene Hackman, thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And Gene Hackman was talking about, you know, fictional, he was just telling his fictional story as the character, how they grew up, they didn't have a lot. They were broke, right? Poor, lived somewhere in the South. And this Black dude, Monroe, was living next to them, right? And then Monroe started, you know, building out his land, Black dude. And then Monroe bought a donkey, a mule, okay? And he was gonna make money off his land, because now he's got a mule, he don't need any people. And so the neighbors was teasing him, and said, oh, Monroe, he's going to have this. Oh, Monroe, he's going to have that. Oh, he just got a mule. Oh, my God, Monroe. So they were like, he's going to do better than you. He's going to surpass you. And then Gene Hackman says, he says, then one day that mule end up dead. And he said they were riding down the road and they saw Monroe and them starting to pack. They were leaving. And he said he looked at his daddy and he could see in his eyes, daddy's dad, he was ashamed that he did it. He's the one that killed the mule. And then he looked at his son and said, son, if you're not better than a N-word, then who are you better than? Okay? So think, so everything you just got finished. See, this is the, this is what I'm talking about here.
Right.
All right? Somebody that worked, they were working their butt off. They weren't the American dream. To get, just leave me alone and let me do my thing
over here.
Right. And then all the people say, oh, look at him. He's gonna. Right. Because he ain't white. So now we can't have this black dude building a business and making me look bad. He is doing not he did the work. Nobody gave him nothing. So now we got to kill the mule. So he can now not prosper. And even though it don't put no money in my pocket, even though it doesn't help me, I can live with myself. And that's the mindset when we talk about envy, okay, versus being happy for people. See, that's the thing that drives me crazy is that, look, if you want a meritocracy, and you don't think these groups of people don't rate, then let's see. You ain't got to do nothing. And just leave them alone. Don't get involved. And let them do their thing. Don't try to stop them. Don't try to create a law. Don't try to do anything. That just, if you believe, then let's go straight up. Let's go head up and see what time it is. Right? They don't want to do that because they know they would be, they'd be lapped.
Absolutely.
Okay? Absolutely. That's the issue. Absolutely. That's the issue. Because if you know, if I'm better than somebody, I ain't got to do a damn thing. Right. I'll go to sleep while they work and I'll run laps around. If I think that's how bad they are or inferior, I should say, then they are, right? Well, we can just do that. But they won't. So they'll come up with anything to try to make sure they'll poison the mule to make sure that you don't have any, even though you bought the mule, even though you did all the work.
It's the issue is when you get into these conversations about somebody taking your job or living in your neighborhood or dating your the idea of ownership is
everything is yours. Every job is white people's job, right? Think about that. Just that mindset. We own all the jobs.
But think about this though, Tony, to be honest with you, if you wanted it, real talk, you could have first dibs. If you worked your ass off and did what I did, you would have first dibs.
Stop. They don't, bro. They don't.
You just don't want, like you said with the mule, you just don't want me to have it.
You don't want me to have it.
It's like breaking up with a girl.
You want to, because again,
you don't want nobody else to be with her either.
The story, the story that Gene Hackman told was true. It was, I can't live with myself if I see this person prosper. That's what that is about. What does it say to me, right, about me if this person is able to surpass me with all the stuff that they go through and they're still able to surpass me, right? And that goes to number seven.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, speak on it. Because this is the last one and we got to wrap up.
Yeah, it's the seven deadly. Yeah. So pride. Pride is obviously the most dangerous. And as we've famously heard, cometh before the fall. This is 2,000 years old. Pride cometh before the fall. The idea of having self-esteem and having confidence is different when you impose that level of pride, just like the story you told. This man was so, somebody said something and he allowed for his pride to infringe upon his humanity. And that was the story was perfect. It's apropos for what we're doing here. And it kind of broke down all. And I'm not saying people aren't psychologically complicated. And we all fall short of the grace, and we all have experienced one of these sins at one point in our lives. It's when you allow for this to consume you to where it affects your political choices, where it affects your economic spending choices, where it affects the way in which you produce or present yourself, not only within your community, but to the world. Because that's what the world is a stage and we're on it. And we should be shining examples of when you can relieve the beginning of the pilgrims, religious persecution, and you come over here and you're allowed to do your thing. But then, of course, the Native Americans have some land that you want, kind of. And so you decide you're just going to take it. And then it becomes part of the interwoven fabric of that take mentality, that conquering spirit, or whatever you want to say is the issue. It diminishes your connection with the world, and it infringes upon your humanity. And that pride that you have is misguided in that regard. What say you?
Buddy. Again, man, these things are simple. Okay? So you said it. Pride in America is not about self-esteem, not just about self-esteem. Mm-hmm. It's about supremacy.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
It's the American exceptionalism. We're better than everybody else. I mean, you grew up. Our country is the best country. Absolutely. You don't know. Absolutely. Blah, blah, blah. And most people ain't even been out of county line.
Absolutely.
All right? They've never been out the state. They never been out the city.
Yep.
Every movie. We the greatest. The whole nine yards. And then so when you have them, that's the system.
Yes.
Okay? That's part of woven in, brainwashing you. Mm-hmm. And look. I should you have pride for your country? Absolutely. Okay. You know, people in Israel are proud of it. People in Europe or the UK or in Ireland, Mexico, everybody should have pride in the country. There's nothing wrong with it. But when you feel that you're the best and everybody else is subservient than you, okay.
Without the effort.
No matter what, right?
Yep.
And so when you have that belief, you above reproach, mm-hmm. okay? You're the golden city on the hill, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. That nobody can touch, right? And so, but what's the negativity of that? It turns into nationalism and it turns into ignorance, all right? And the inability to admit that there's work that, guess what? There are countries that's better than us in this. Yep. There are people that better than us in this. It's okay. It's not the end of the world, right? But it's a me thing. It's we're this, right? And everybody else is. I remember my man, real quick. I don't know if you have, his name was Cherry. He was, he had a big church in Maryland. Okay. I forget his name, John Cherry, I think, whatever. And actually, President Clinton had him, President Clinton went to his church and then had him at the State of the Union, right? So I went to his church a couple of times when I was visiting Baltimore. And then I used to listen, he used to have some tapes that I would listen to on his sermons and stuff like that. I learned a lot. I mean, my man, he was very smart, very historic. I mean, he dove into the Bible, dove into history, net. But the reason I'm bringing it up reminds me of this. So he was talking about, you know, how with the Bible, okay, is that people think that black people are a byproduct of, okay? So we're not the product. We're a byproduct of. We're, you know, God made this, and then he made this extra piece over here, right? The leftovers, right? And so he was trying to teach people, like, that ain't real, blah, blah, blah. This and that. But that goes to that nationalism thing, mm-hmm. is that, you know, we're the best. We do everything right. We're the smartest. We do this. We do that. And everybody else is garbage. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. And you can see now how we're rolling into that deep in terms of a lot of our policies, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Our allies are now our dogs.
Yep.
Okay. And but we're the best and this and that, and we deserve this, and we going to take Greenland, you know, forget mm-hmm. those people. We mm-hmm. taking it. We going to build a casino in Gaza. Don't matter. That's these people's land. You know, we're America. We going to put a casino, a flag. We're the best, and we're going to rule.
Take that's Panama. We're going to take the Panama Canal.
We're going to take Panama Canal. You know what I mean? Panama, we're going to name it something. It ain't the Gulf of Mexico no more. It's the Gulf of America.
That's right.
Think about that. So this leads audacity. Right into, this is the most dangerous of them all. And this is where we start decaying. We have already started decaying, but this is where we start going backwards, brother. Yeah, final absolutely. Thoughts, my brother.
So I think that, you know, once again, I can't wait to go back and review the comments and get a different perspective, because we're not infallible. The one thing you hate to have people who feel like they are the end all be all know it all. And we're not prideful enough to think that everything that we said out of our mouth is the gospel and that was it. And we said it and there's nothing else to it. These things are multi-layered. These things are multifaceted. But the basic blocking and tackling of humanity has been telling you since the 4th century that if you exhibit these things, you're on a slippery slope to hell. This is a situation where your sins are being examined and you're going to have to answer to someone at some point in time. A lot of times it's here, and all the time it's in the hereafter. And so the idea of the seven deadliest of sins, it's everybody's sins. We were born into it, that's fine. But when you start exhibiting these things and you don't check yourself, or you don't have an accountability buddy or somebody that loves you to say, hey, you're overarching on that level of humanity. All these things are part of our humanity. But when you start making it your policy, when you said, make it your law, when you start making it the way in which the country is identified, it becomes problematic, because now you're aligned and embedded with what is classically been known as sin.
And there's no question.
That's a tough situation. So I would hope that people would just be conscious of that. You know, just have your conscious mind open the aperture and say, wait a second, I'm starting to identify or subscribe or embody things that I really don't feel should be aligned with who my grandmother would have wanted me to be, or my mom would have wanted me to be. You got to think of these old, and you talked about a harken back to a simpler time, a different time where people were more conscientious and courteous. We are just greedy, selfish, and self-centered and idealistic. Man, it's a lot of things that we just aren't being the best Americans that we could be. And I think there's room for improvement. And I hope that this helps that conversation.
Well said, my friend. Well said. So we hope you enjoyed this episode of A Black Executive Perspective Podcast, the seven Deadly Sins. And we wish that you tune in again to our next live recording, probably next week.
Yeah. And we love doing it live. We love the feedback. We love the interaction. It's very good. So, but we also want you to tune in and check out Need to Know with Dr. Nasinga Burton. Every week we have Need to Know as a Black Executive Perspective pod, you know, that comes on and gives information that allows for her to dive into timely and crucial topics that shape our community and our world. So we want to make sure you tune in and check that segment out, because it's very deep, very introspective, and provides a lot of good information. So check it out.
Absolutely. And don't forget to check out the next Pull Up Speak Up on a Black Executive Perspective Podcast. Our roundtable dives into today's most hard-hitting topics. Every voice counts. Every perspective sparks change. It's not just talk. It's a call to action. Don't forget to check out Pull Up Speak Up here on a Black Executive Perspective Podcast.
Love to Pull Up Speak Up. Love the dynamic of different views and different energies culminating in great conversation, great dialogue. But we also want to make sure that we remember to incorporate LESS. This is our call to action for you guys. Our goal is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve this, we're asking you to embrace less, LESS. And the L stands for learn. Educate yourself on racial and cultural nuances. Educate yourself on some of the things that we spoke about today. Go look it up. You know, use whatever platform you have, and always counterbalance those levels of information to make sure that it resonates with what you're trying to accomplish.
Absolutely. And after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. So we want you to understand diverse perspectives, because when you learn about other racial and cultural nuances, you're able to put yourself in their shoes, which allows you to have empathy.
And then today live, we shared, S is for share, the first S. And we shared our insights and tried to enlighten you on how we felt about America and its alignment with the seven deadly sins. Hopefully through the comments, you share your perspective on that as well.
And absolutely. And the final S stands for stop. You want to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. So if Aunt Jenny or Uncle Joe say something that's inappropriate, at the Sunday dinner table, you say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that, and you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, L-E-S-S, we'll build a more fair, a more understanding world, and we all will be able to see the change that we want to see, because less will become more.
So make sure that you tune in for all the things that we spoke about on this platform. Check us out next week again live with a fascinating topic that we'll have for you. If you have any suggestions, make sure that you reach out to us. Go to the website, sign up for the newsletter, review us, like us now while you're here, subscribe wherever you're listening to us. And Tony, where can they find us?
Buddy, you can find the Black Executive Perspective podcast right here on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on our social handles of X, YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, at A Black Exec. For my fabulous co-host, the co-host with the most, my boy down in Dallas, Chris P. Reed, I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We're going to continue to strive about it, and we're going to thrive about it. We love you, and now we're out.